Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Hardcore Listing Podcast. I'm one half of your presenting duo. I'm Stu Whiffin, sitting opposite me always, Christopher Glasson.
Your significant other, yeah.
You right?
The better half. I'm okay, mate. I'm not. I was spray painting in the back garden first thing this morning.
Oh, you're such a hipster, aren't you? Or was you just doing a little bit of like spray can art, stenciling in Margate?
Yeah, just a little bit of street art and that. I'll probably sell that brick wall for a few million, yeah. I reckon. No, I was spraying table legs. That's not as exciting. Right. I was doing it like about 9:30 last night. I don't think the neighbours or anyone was happy with me. And so I thought I'd start this morning as well.
If you test the spray paint on a bit of cardboard before you spray it on the thing, cock and bollocks, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to agree, but I'd be lying. I just do like a mad squiggle.
Oh,
yeah,
look at you tagging a bit of cardboard. Just draw a cock and balls, man.
I'll get 50 quid for one of those bits of cardboard. I'm going to start doing a cock and balls, though, Stu. Thank you for correcting my behaviour there.
No worries. Right, before we do anything, let's talk about our sponsors. So we've got a sponsor that is also a podcast. It's the Say What podcast, and by its own admission and confirmed by us, it's the worst podcast you can possibly ever listen to. It's really bad.
Trap.
It is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You ain't even listened, have you?
I have. I've listened to first episode with FAWT, yeah. Or FAAT. Is it FAWT?
I'm not sure.
The notorious FAT.
I'm not sure.
Anyway, it's Big Papa J. He decided to, because he couldn't get on Distraction Pieces because he kept getting banned, he thought he'd just do his own podcast. And I believe he's got loads of his own face just plastered around the M25,
yeah.
Hasn't he? He's put them all up on billboards.
His marketing budget was spent on billboards, just putting his own face and his podcast on there, which is incredible and just ridiculous. Mm. But I guess that sort of sums up the podcast. It's incredible and ridiculous and essentially shit. And they're one of our lovely sponsors. So go check out the podcast. You can get it. Wherever you get your podcast. I should say it's called Say What. It's the Say What podcast.
Say What podcast, yeah. With Big Papa J, Notorious FAT. And what do they talk? The episode I listened to was just madness.
It's
just
nonsense.
The insane ramblings of Justin Price.
When I went on there, they said I had to do a what, why and a where. I tried to do that, but Justin just got too drunk and just wanted to talk. Drivel. So it was just an absolute shower of shit. And I believe that's pretty much what you get every week. And so, yeah, great to have them on board as a sponsor.
Sign up.
Also, Love Beer. Tell us about Love Beer, Chris.
I'm going to tell you about Summer Academy because I've told you about Charlie quite a few times recently. I'm going to talk about Summer Academy. He said that he's going to deck me when he sees me because I apologise. I hadn't responded to Summer Academy. Summer Academy runs karate classes up and down the country. He has many a dojo. And I didn't respond to him in adequate time the other day. And I said, oh, I'm really sorry. He said, it's all right, mate. Don't ever worry about replying. And I'm like, no, because we've got a film with you soon. In a karate dojo, and I don't want you double leg sweeping me. And he's basically said, it really doesn't matter what I do or say, I'm in for it that day. So, I wish I could learn some karate before I go to Summer Academy so I can defend myself a bit better.
Stop,
but yes,
stop,
if you want to learn...
I wish I could learn some karate. You've been dining out on the fact that you're a black belt for about 20 fucking years. And now push comes to shove and you've got to actually show up and display these skills that you've been banging on about. All of a sudden, you've got to learn some karate.
I don't think I've ever mentioned karate or me being a black belt or Essex champion ever. So yeah, I take it all back now.
Okay.
I'm well, terrified. Look,
if you're like Chris and are interested in learning some karate, where do they go, mate?
Sama-academy.co.uk. Renshi Simon James runs a number of academies around the southeast, where you can, and your kids, and you can even do parent and baby self-defense courses. But that is actually a career. It's a growing industry, karate. It's great for the mind and great for discipline and your health. And yeah, there's loads opening up. So if you actually want a career in that, then you can actually look into that. So if you like your fitness, if you already have some degree of martial arts training, go and check it out. See if there's an opportunity for you.
Absolutely.
There.
And if you don't want to get fit and really work on, you know, a healthier mind and body, then go check out lovebeer.co.uk. They're our third sponsor. They will give you absolutely amazing booze. Like, they'll deliver it. Well, they don't deliver it to the door anymore, do they? I'll tell you what they will come and do at your house. They'll build you a bar. They can build the most bespoke, incredible bars in the most weirdest and wonderful places. And through lockdown, I know so many of you signed up and had the deliveries where Charles will come and literally deliver these incredible bottles of booze and cans of booze to your doorstep. So, yeah, go check out our longest suffering sponsor.
OG.
The OG, yeah. Charles. Mm-hmm. Charles? Charles. How is it?
Don't keep saying it, it'll freak
Sorry.
Just let's leave it.
Chaz.
Chaz. Yeah. He loves Chaz.
Yeah, love beer. So go check them out. They'll all be tagged on the socials. So go give them a follow, a like. And yeah, but don't listen to the Say What podcast. It's really bad. Should we get on with today's episode?
Absolutely, mate. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Well, we've got some other podcasters on today. And Alice, Josh.
Professionals.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very happy to be here. Thank you for having us.
Absolute pleasure.
Yeah, wonderful.
Absolute
hot.
Pleasure. It is Scorchio today, isn't it? And I'll tell you what is red hot. Your podcast. Tell us all about your podcast.
That's a link. That's a link.
Go on, Josh. Take it away.
So we are Just Films and That, and we talk about underrated, underseen films, amongst other things. So essentially, me and Alice are the co-hosts, and we take it in turns to pick a film that we think is underrated or underseen for whatever reason. We talk about it, obviously having watched it, and then we decide, is it underrated, is it underseen? Every now and then, we chuck in a classic film to sort of say, does this deserve the classic status? We have guests on, such as yourselves. Jew came on and talked about a film that's just close to their heart. And that's pretty much it, isn't it, Alice?
That is pretty much it. Yeah. But we're very nice about it. It's a celebration.
Yeah, we don't
of
like to criticise stuff.
Yeah, we really try. And it's a positive space, especially when we've got guests on as well. Like, we want to get excited about your film. Obviously, when things are bad, we'll highlight that. But we're never going in to attack it. Like, I feel like so many podcasts are just sort of attacking films and just like saying everything that's wrong with them. So we take the shit films and find everything that's right with them.
I love it. Yeah. I was Alice, a massive fan throughout my sort of like mid-20s. I guess it started as just watching junk when I was a kid, but I then became such a big fan of B-movies to the point where you can find fault in it, but it also they also tell you where, like, how I would write a script and the sort of like pitfalls that I would do, and also the things that are just absolutely just so much fun when you watch B-movies, where you can start predicting quite how wacky it goes. So I like that attitude. I like the taking a positive sort of like look on them. And yeah, I mean, that as a premise for a podcast is an absolute corker, because, you know, I mean, we can all agree Independence Day is the greatest film of all time, but well, sometimes you want to shine some light.
We've done it, actually.
Independence Day. One of our guests chose that, and I think we did come to the conclusion, or at least I did, that it was a bit underrated because it was so much better than I remembered it being.
Yeah.
Well, what he said was, it was quite interesting, he said it doesn't have the legacy of other big films. Yeah. He said, so like if you look at, I don't know, Terminator or Aliens or Predator
Die Hard,
something like that, Lethal Weapon. It doesn't have that legacy. It obviously had a sequel that was made like 20 years later that sort of was, I haven't even seen it, but from what the impression I get is sort of a bit bit flat and nothing happens in it. But we did decide it was pretty underrated, didn't we, Alice? Not underseen because it's, massive hit, but... But it is an underrated.
It almost burnt itself out, Independence Day. Sorry to absolutely derail this straight onto a different film, but to me, Independence Day, like there was, I probably saw it twice at the cinema, and there wasn't one person who walked out of the cinema who wasn't having the time of their life. Like me and all my friends came out, we were like, that was great. And people, both times I went with different groups of people, I went with family at one point as well, and everyone really liked it. And then within about 18 months to 24 months, all of a sudden it was getting a bit like, I don't know, people suddenly didn't like it. And I can't speak on everyone. That is my observations. And then suddenly it was getting the mickey taken. I was thinking, hold on, I thought that was quite good, Independence Day.
Which one's that? Is that Will Smith saves the world?
Yeah.
One of the ones where Will Smith saves the world.
Yeah. With a massive slap. He just gives a big slap.
Yeah. Is that the one where he literally just walks out of rubble at the end?
Yeah, but I'm telling you, right, go back and watch it. Because this is what I was thinking. When they picked it, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this, watching it when I was a kid, and it was just really cheesy and a bit naff. But it's actually a really well-constructed story with some really good lines of action. I reckon give it another chance. I think
I'll
like it.
I'll happily rewatch it.
One of the things it does do, which we talked about, was that there's a lot of films like that, these big disaster movies, and what they do is they get an all-star cast and they just go throw everything at the cast and just like, so they can't compensate and they can't balance that out with story. So you get characters and he's like, he was barely in it. Mm. Or like I didn't understand his plot line or her plot line. It just went nowhere. Whereas Independence Day, to be fair, one thing I did notice when I was looking at it critically was everyone's story is wrapped up and everyone gets a moment to shine. So, yeah.
Nice. Clear story arcs, like it.
Right. What's your top five?
Alice, do you want to do this one or should I take it?
So what is our category?
Yes.
Yeah, what are you going for?
So we've picked the top five films that we wish we'd been to see on the opening night. Is that right, Josh? Have I explained that properly?
It is. Yeah. So top five films that that we didn't watch on opening night, that we couldn't watch on opening night or haven't watched on opening night so that we could be the first people to see it. And then, therefore, it didn't come with any baggage whatsoever.
Right.
Oh, I love it.
Right.
I love it. Yeah.
That was my thinking. I was like, what do I wish I'd gone in? Because there are films you go in, like, spoilers if you've not seen it, and this isn't on mine, but it might be on yours. What would it have been like to go into The Sixth Sense?
Yeah. It was good.
Something like that. Yeah.
That was a great week, Josh, that was for films. Yeah.
1999, what a year for films.
Yeah. Sorry to cut into you there, mate. I just got too excited when you said six.
But yeah, so that's the idea, isn't it, Alice? Like films that we wish we'd seen on opening night that we could have gone into with entirely as little knowledge as possible.
Well, the way that I sort of inferred it was more like to kind of feel what the feeling would have been like on that first night as well. Being like, what would I want to have truly experienced and get like an authentic reaction from everyone around me. That's kind of where my brain went with it.
That's brilliant. I'm really looking forward to this. And
in fact, at least sorry to interrupt, at least two of mine are like what I wanted to be in the cinema and see what the vibe was like.
Can we have some honourable mentions to the best reactions you've had in cinemas? Like, you know, where you've sort of like been in a cinema and there's been like, oh, bloody hell, that was good.
I mean, I've got one. This is a funny one.
So
I was at uni, third year. I'm not going to give you the whole life story. But basically, a couple of my mates were going to the cinema and they were like, oh, we're going to go watch the final Twilight film. And I hadn't seen any of the Twilight films. And I was like, not really my thing. But I was like, you know what? I like hanging out with you. Let's all go to the cinema and watch Twilight. And obviously in this one, spoilers if you haven't seen the last Twilight film. But there's like this whole scene that feels like it's real and feels like it's actually happening in the narrative. And then it turns out to be a vision. And there was just like this collective, like, oh, like release of kind of excitement and I guess tension and stuff. Obviously, it meant nothing to me. I was like, don't they do this all the time or whatever? Like, okay, vampire's cool. But everyone was just like you could feel it. And I was really surprised. And I really remember that because I was just so surprised that it was a quite a good experience, even though I didn't really care about the film. Yeah, that was an interesting one.
Nice.
Trying to think of a few. I remember, so obviously, the one that comes to mind, and this isn't that old a film, so spoilers if you've not seen it, but is the newest Spider-Man.
Oh, right,
so
yeah.
So
yeah,
have you seen it?
Yeah.
Have you seen it, Stu, or are you not bothered about spoilers?
No, I'm not worried about spoilers.
Yeah, so the bit where the other two Spider-Mans come back, everyone cheered, and I've never been in a cinema where everyone cheered before. It was like, I've only ever seen it in America. Like on clips of stuff. So that was good. That was like, because I think for me, obviously, the first Spider-Man, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, was the first time I remember going to the cinema because I would have been 11 and like coming out being like oh, wow. blown away, actually breathless, actually speechless or whatever. So Spider-Man was one. Endgame was probably one as well, I must say. Just a cinema full of nerds on opening night going, Captain America caught the hammer. I remember watching Return of the King and a lot of people getting up and then sitting back down again every 5 minutes because it gets to the end and loads of people going, right, that must be
30-minute wrap-up. And then
more.
Frodo got a job Asda. Why do I want to know
going.
This part of the story? Like, it's 20 years later. Like, why do I know that he's
everyone lived happily ever after? But let's show you everyone living happily ever after. So that was good. I've never walked out of a cinema or anything like that. I've been taken out because I was scared when I was a kid. That was Mask of Zorro, actually, which was the first episode me and Alice ever did. But I was like 8 or something. So I got scared and my granddad took me out.
Oh, bless.
But other than that, have you ever walked out?
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah. Walked out because I was too scared.
What were you scared of?
Exorcist, director's cut. I didn't really get into horror films until I was like 20. And I had seen horror films before that, but not many. And director's cut, it's just too much for me. I was 18 and I turned to my mate and I went, yeah, I'm out of here. I felt physically sick. And I actually had the same repulsion watching the scene in Alien, is it Prometheus, when she removes the alien out of her chest with the machine, and I started broke out into a cold sweat watching that. So that's one instance. I think I've walked out of others. I walked out of the Scorpion King, and I kind of loved The Rock. I loved the Mummy series, but I was with a girl mate who was there consoling me because I'd had some bad news, but like I could tell she was not enjoying it. And to be honest with you, it was shit. So
that's a bad night, isn't it?
I've got images of you looking at the Scorpion King going, he will never be a film star.
Yeah.
I'm not having it.
Sit to wrestling, mate.
I walked out of, is it James Woods Vampires?
Oh, the John Carpenter one.
That was so shit. Yeah. I got halfway through that and I was like, no. And I got up and tried to leave loads of times with, is it the Thin Blue? No, Thin Red Line.
The Terrence Malick one with like,
Everybody in it.
It,
and there's just a scene about 5 hours in where the boat just like, just sails off for ages with nothing happening. And it's like, and credits, and then it just cuts, and like literally, you just had the whole audience just go, oh, for fuck's sake! Like you could just. Do you know what? I had such high expectations of that as well, and I know a lot of people really love that movie, but I was like, nah, it just bored me. Anyway, we've gone right off of off the track already, so let's pull it back. Right, top five. Who's going first?
Ladies first, I think.
All right, go on then. Starting at number 5, yeah?
Yeah.
Going down to 1, just making sure I don't fuck my list up. Right, number 5 is Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping.
I knew this would be on your list.
I didn't think Josh would be surprised at this. That film is funnier and better than it has any right to be. I was just, you couldn't have put into my wildest dreams what I was expecting and then what it was. It's just a fucking brilliant film.
What is it?
It's so funny. But oh, right, sorry. Pop star Never Stop Never Stopping. It's got the Lonely Island in it, if you know they are.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Lonely Island. Yeah, of course, yeah.
It's
sorry,
yeah,
before I go
Andy
off on
Sandberg,
one. Yeah.
Isn't it?
It's basically a parody of Justin Bieber, isn't it? It's basically a parody of Never Saying Never,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
much.
And it's just so funny. And the songs are brilliant. The production value is so high. It looks amazing. Andy Samberg is great. I just love it so much. And I would have loved to have been there in the cinema, in the theatre with the people and just, like, when are they laughing? What beats are they seeing? Like, and just, I would have just loved to have gauged the reaction. And if it was one of surprise because it was so good, because I just didn't expect it to be as good as it was. Oh, it's so good. I mean, I don't even want to say if you haven't seen it, go and watch it, because I think maybe part of the reason that I liked it so much as well was because I already liked The Lonely Island loads. So if you don't like them already, I don't know if it is as good. But yeah, boss, love it.
I think it's the only film we've done on the podcast where Alice has decided it's too short.
Yeah, it's 1 hour 28. Like, I was like, give me 15 more minutes, please. You can fit more songs in there.
Have you seen
but
it?
There
Chris?
Were there were songs that they took out.
Yeah, yeah. I like Andy Samberg a lot. I really do. You know, I mean, later on he's done Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is great. I just like his sensibilities. I just think he's funny. He did. What was the other film I really enjoyed? Hot Rod.
Hot Rod's brilliant.
Palm Springs.
Yeah, brilliant.
But, what's that one, Josh? What's the other
Palm
one?
Palm Springs is good.
Oh, Palm Springs is good. Yeah.
It's good.
It's really
and
good.
Celeste and Jesse Forever is another one he did with Rashida Jones, which is very good.
I've not seen that. Yeah. So that's one I'll get to
It's
enjoy.
Worth watching. It's more serious. It's not like, it's a comedy, but it's more like an indie comedy rather than an out-and-out comedy.
Cool.
I think it's brilliant. And yeah, Lonely Island, you know, obviously. I think, have you got a favourite Lonely Island song?
So the one I do always come back to is Jack Sparrow. Like, yeah, that is a hard question. And if you know, we did the top five Lonely Island songs, like, that would be a much harder category. But yeah, the Jack Sparrow one, because Michael Bolton is just fucking hilarious as well. It's just so good.
I just had sex as well.
It's so catchy. I'm on a boat, like.
What is the one? I like I'm a Boss that he did with Seth
like
Rogen.
Like a Boss, that, yeah, that's a bit of an older
the
one.
The first time you watch that, it takes a bit of a weird direction. And it then, oh God, is it I Came In My Pants? What's that one called?
Jizz in My Pants.
That was huge, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was the big first one, wasn't it? Yeah. That was like the first time everyone, I think, knew about them.
For any listeners who haven't watched this must sound so weird. Oh yeah, and have you seen a Dick in a Box?
Yeah.
Dick in a Box is, I don't know, I really think that's great. And yeah, I love his sentiment, his sense of humour, really. So that's such a great shout. And one for you to enjoy, Stu. I kind of had that reaction with Austin Powers, Alice, to be fair, at the cinema. Because no one knew. Like, we went pretty much opening weekend to that, me and a few mates. And then we were just pissing our pants throughout it. We came out, we were like, that was insanely funny. I mean, I haven't watched it back. It's probably, like, probably cancelable. I have no idea what's in Austin Powers. I know it was very funny. But yeah, like, that was the same, like, zero expectation and was just, like, rolling around the floor laughing.
So I've had this conversation before about the, like, cancelability of Austin Powers and stuff, but, like, it is satire. Like, it's not presented to you in that way, but some people say, oh, yeah, that wouldn't get made now, and it's like, what do you mean? It's taking the piss out of James Bond. Like, it was never serious.
There are
loads of films that were made at a time, and then you go back and go, oh, that's... That American Pie.
Yeah, American Pie's bad.
Austin Powers, it's like I had the same feeling that you're talking about, Chris, there with Austin Powers with The Hangover, which in the cinema when I was like 18, thought it was hilarious. And I tried to watch it as a 30-odd-year-old man and gone, it's bad. It's like, it's not any good. It's like, and then I think my biggest problem with The Hangover is that after it was done, they did Bridesmaids, and the marketing team tried to capitalize on the success of The Hangover by going, it's The Hangover, but like women. Mm-hmm. And Bridesmaids is so much better.
It's brilliant.
And so much more than The Hangover, but with women.
Yeah,
so I think
absolutely.
That was that. Yeah. I think every generation's got those films where you look at them and you're like, oh, it's aged badly, isn't it?
Absolutely, Josh. Bridesmaids has got, again, really good character development and story arcs. It's maybe in my top five comedies. I've watched it a lot.
It
kills me, Bridesmaids.
It's funny.
Yeah.
Yes, well, Stu, we're just bombarding you with films today, mate. Sorry, I'm like,
going
sitting here excited.
I'll tell you what I'll get you to watch Popstar, Stu, or I think. It's basically this generation's Spinal Tap.
Better. No, I mean,
that's good one, Josh.
That's what I think it is. It's like, it's a send up of modern music, except, you know, it's music now, it's Justin Bieber and it's other stuff. And it's just about gluttony and like opulence, isn't it, Alice? It's very funny.
Love it. Josh.
So my number five is definitely the wankiest answer. So all the others are pretty mainstream, but this one. Now, it's a French film, and I'm not going to pronounce it in French. I'm going to pronounce it in English because I don't want to. Okay. I want to do it justice. It's called The Arrival of a Train.
It's from
1896.
Oh, the Lumiere brothers.
And a lot of people said that when they showed it. Mm. Yeah, a lot of people say when they showed it, because people hadn't seen cinema before, that everyone ran out screaming. Mm. Now, I've heard various stories. So if you haven't seen it, it's basically a point of view of a platform and a train arriving into the platform. I think it's about 30 seconds long. It's not very long. And it's one of the first films made. I think it's one of those where it's debated what is the first or whatever. But when it was shown in the cinema in Paris, everybody ran out screaming, thinking a train was going to burst out of the screen. But on the other hand, I've also heard people just sort of flinched because they didn't know what to expect. And I wanted to be there in 1896 in Paris so I could see for sure, did everyone run out screaming? Or did everyone just sort of go, oh, like, because they must have come out and gone, a train's not going to run you over. Like, because it's not that long ago. Do you know what I mean? Like, logic would dictate, well, there isn't a train track behind this building.
Marketing, right? That's marketing. Yeah. The PA's done that.
Yeah. So that's my number five, because I just want to know.
Right.
Yeah. I just want to know.
I think Pip showed me that years, literally, when we were at uni, Josh. I'm sure Pip gave me a few films, and that was in there. Because obviously Pip's pretentious as fuck. he's exposed me to his privates, but also loads of awesome films. And I think that was one of them.
Yeah, it was between that or the Salvador Dali film in Chien Andalou, which is like where if you've not seen it, it's on YouTube and it's only about 20 minutes long.
Did you do film at college as well? Because
in college, when we did film studies at college, they showed us in Chien Andalou. And if you haven't, I'm not going to even say what happens in it, but in the first 5 minutes, something happens that I've never seen a room full of people almost throw up before. Mm. At the same time, it's on YouTube. It's horrible. but I'd love to. Yeah, there's a moment in it, but I think that's a few years after the train one.
I'll check it out, but after, before eating.
Mm. Yeah, definitely, definitely.
What's your number four, Alice?
Right, number four is The Room.
I still haven't watched it.
That's good.
I've still not watched
it's
it.
Good.
I almost made my list as well. Almost made my
it.
List.
You should watch it. It will be worth your time, I promise.
I'm literally writing it down in my notepad, Alice, because I get sometimes like, oh, what do I want to watch? The Room.
So obviously, the film in itself is iconic and did sort of provoke various reactions from various people, some very extreme reactions and stuff. But if you watch it as kind of an experiment and an example of just something completely separate to what you know films to be, then it's really, really fascinating. So I say that I love it when people ask me because it's fascinating. But I think sometimes people are like, no, but it's obviously shit though. Yeah, it's obviously shit. And it's like, well, in some regards, yeah. But in other ways, it's like it's so rare nowadays that you'll see something that you've just never seen before. And when you watch The Room, that is what you get. So I would have just, want to be amazing. There, you know, want to see what are people thinking. Are they laughing? Are they crying? Are they screaming? Like, what's going on?
It was almost made my list that, and particularly because on Tuesday, we're actually doing the Disaster Artist.
Yeah, with one of our guests.
With one of our guests, he's picked the Disaster Artist, which if you haven't seen it, is about the making of The Room. So it's such a strange film, isn't it?
It's a real cultural moment. And I just wanted to be there to see the start of it.
should you watch The Room, then The Disaster Artist?
I would.
Because I've kind of not watched either yet, because I'm like, I need to watch them at some point.
I would watch The Room, then The Disaster Artist, because it'll
inform a lot of the comedy.
They recreate a lot of The Room in The Disaster Artist, like really, really accurately as well, to the point where the end credits is just a side-by-side. Mm. to show. I think they basically want to go, this is how much effort we've put in.
Yeah,
to recreate it. And it is, it's definitely, yeah, the room's definitely worth a watch. You can go to like midnight screenings at the Prince Charles and other cinemas.
Huge cult
and
following. Huge cult following.
It's like, yeah, it's like that Rocky Horror, isn't it? Mm. People go in with like stuff to say and shout stuff at the
You're
screen.
You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
I didn't know until last night, that was just James Dean.
Oh, I thought yeah, he'd no, I only knew that,
but it's James Dean, isn't it? But yeah, The Room.
Great shout.
I could not get my head around it when I watched it for the first time. I was like, and I've got to be honest, I was probably more in the kind of corner of, this is so shit. Like,
I understand.
And I know, and I really love the fact, Alice, that you say it's a safe place and it's a kind place, and you're very generous and lovely about the films. This ain't such a safe space. I just thought it was really bad. And like, and I was trying to kind of go, right, what am I missing here? Why am I not getting why this is so huge when there must be so many films that are this bad? Yet The Room has become this absolute iconic movie. And I don't get it.
It's because
I think it's because of how
bad it is and the ways in which it is bad, like ways that you would just never see in air quotes an ordinary film.
Yeah.
Like the way he did it was just completely unorthodox, didn't make any sense, wasn't financially sound, wasn't good for the editors, for the scriptwriter, like it wasn't good for anyone. And so it's just it's just such a fascinating watch to consider all those things.
Yeah.
Like everything that you're meant to do as a producer, as a director, as an actor, it's like he did the complete opposite, but still tried to make a film. And it's so interesting to watch it in that way.
It's almost the same appeal as Car Crash Telly, isn't it?
Mm.
It's that sort of thing of like, this is, how can it be so shit?
I didn't turn it off.
Yeah, did he know it's shit?
I watched the whole thing I've watched it since. Like, so there's something there because I've watched it twice in total and it's like, but even the second time I was like, this is just terrible. Like,
just plot lines that don't follow through, characters that disappear halfway through. Oh, it's just like, it's so mental.
Love it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Question number four, Josh.
My number four is The Matrix.
Oh, sick. Good choice. I thought about that too.
Yeah, obviously The Matrix did so much for cinema, particularly action and sci-fi cinema, and I just would love to have been there on opening night because I didn't watch it until I was about 13 or 14, and when I watched it on video, I'd love to have been there to know. You know, again, it's all about knowing what did people leave going, I don't get it. Or did people leave going, oh my God, that was amazing. I think, you know, based on the legacy of the film, I think most people probably left going, that was amazing. But what an incredible feat of filmmaking. Mm. I mean, it's huge, isn't it, The Matrix? It's massive. And I think even now, 20 plus years on, let's not, you know, not getting into the sequels, but it did change a lot. It was a real landmark moment in cinema, in big screen cinema, in what you could do. You know, it went from It completely changed action, didn't it? Because it went from basically you do some close-ups and then you lash a stunt man or stunt woman in there and then hope for the best to, no, you take the actors off and you you train them for 6 months and then make them do it themselves. So I think, you know, a lot of modern blockbusters owe a lot to The Matrix. And I think that's...
The choreography, that was the watershed for me, especially being someone who grew up on martial arts films. So I watched, I love all the Japanese martial arts films, and the once you start, that was about the watershed of choreography being so much better that you go back and watch something like Kickboxer with Jean-Claude Van Damme, and it's unwatchable. It's the fight scenes are so bad. It's like I can't watch this because I could do that fight scene, and then you watch something like The Matrix, and it. So we went there. I mean, I obviously didn't go to a premiere like in London, but we went round about opening weekend again. I was around. I think it was 1998, so I was 18, and Josh, it was insanely good. I remember like at the end. Spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it yet. It's a bit mental, but. When Neo gets up after getting riddled with bullets, people, myself and some of my mates included, were standing up cheering in the cinema. And I rarely got that deep into a film, but it was so good. Like, so in that, there was such a great science fiction concept in it. I mean, yeah, you could argue Skynet from Terminator done that, but in a different, it was in a way I'd perceive as definitely original. And then with, again, incredible story arcs and a mystery as it went along as well. Oh mate, by the end
every time I watch it, I must watch it at least once a year, and I just enjoy it every time. Yeah. I see something new every time, and
every beat is good. Sorry, Josh, but yeah, there's no boring moments. It's just
she's a Keanu fan. I'm a big Keanu fan,
but it is a brilliant film as well, separate from him. Sorry, Josh, interrupted.
I still like to think John Wick is set in The Matrix.
Oh yeah,
because when The Matrix Resurrections came out, and obviously he's got the long hair and beard, and a lot of people, the newest one, a lot of people went, "What if it's just John Wick?" And he's been like the whole time, they've convinced him he's John Wick. And I was like, I'd buy that. Like, yeah, I'd absolutely buy that. Like, I'd watch that. But yeah, no, I love The Matrix. It's an absolutely brilliant film. Like you say, Chris, when you're unpicking stuff, it's like everything is always taken from elsewhere. So like you say, Skynet. But then if you pull on that thread, you can go back to
absolutely
Metropolis in the 30s. Yeah. You can go back to ancient Greece. You can go back to Deus Ex Machina. Mm-hmm. You can go to all that sort of stuff. And it's so just, I just enjoy it. And like you say, the choreography, again, if you watch them, the choreography, it's funny because if you then watch, for example, a Bond film before The Matrix and a Bond film after The Matrix, obviously Daniel Craig does amazing action in all his Bond films. Then you go to like the Roger Moore ones and it's just the fight scenes are like two sort of awkward middle-aged men struggling. Yeah. And just sort of to the point where they hit each other, they go ooh like that, and you're like, what? You're like, what? You're watching like Spy You Love when you're going, it's just, this isn't a fight, this is just like a struggle.
It's proper, man. I know what you mean.
So yeah, the Matrix, love it.
Yeah, that's a great shout, man. Great shout. Shu, did you like it?
You
it
know
much,
I
like,
don't
sci-fi
like the Matrix.
Shit,
why are you trying
oh
to make
what?
Me say
We're
it?
We're on a different planet.
You know, I don't like sci-fi apart from Star Wars, right?
Shu likes gritty...
kitchen sink bleak British films.
Nearly said something so inappropriate then.
Ken Loach is The Matrix.
Exactly. That is what I want to see. Like, him on benefits, like, he's having a really bad fucking time of it, you know? Looking like they're going to repossess his ass. He has to do something he doesn't want to do. It all ends really horribly. Like,
it's just that. What do you want? Food banks. Lots of food banks.
Exactly. That's the sort of Matrix I want to watch.
Red or the blue pill, both. I'm starving.
Yeah, absolutely starving,
mate. I need to
feed
my kids. And then he comes out into the Matrix and it's just more bleak.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And they're like, sorry, we were trying to do you a favour, but you know.
The fight scenes would be probably just, I don't know, someone just gets clattered with a bottle in a pub car park. Just something like that. Just I know where I'm at with stuff like that.
Dodge this.
Oh, mate, that'd be amazing. Like,
I think there's something in that, Stu.
Absolutely.
Who'd play Neo? It'd be like
Stephen Graham. Stephen Graham.
Yeah.
Yes.
Timothy Spall as Timothy Spall as Agent Smith.
I'm on both. That'd be amazing.
Sally Hawkins in there as Trinity.
Trying
to play Morpheus.
That's what we need.
Adrian Lester as Morpheus. You get it in there.
I'm all over this.
a bleak British Matrix.
Oh, exactly. Richard Hawley can score it. It'd be fucking brilliant. End
fight in a tube station.
Oh, imagine that. A whole series of films reworking sci-fi classics as bleak kitchen sink dramas. Oh, be all over that.
I do actually think you're onto something there. All we need you to do now is come up with just a play on the title.
Oh, don't worry about that.
But that will come at some point.
The Matrix. I don't know. So.
Oh, amazing. Right, who's up next?
It's number three, Alice.
All right, number three, I've gone with The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, good shout. Oh.
Again, a bit of a cultural moment, sort of demonstrating a real shift in, I suppose, capabilities with technology, but then also what people were capable of and the way that sort of editors and cinematographers, etc., were developing at this time. Obviously, because it goes from black and white into being colour. And I'd like to think that would just blow your mind being sat in the cinema, because colour cinema was already around, but I believe don't fucking quote me on this, but I think The Wizard of Oz was the first to do it in black and white and then moving into colour. But I do think they'd already sort of done the odd thing with colour, and it is a classic. Like, if we were gonna, one of our things on the podcast is that we do classic films, and I think this really is a classic. Like, you see it everywhere, like everyone parodies it. You can't watch an episode of Family Guy or The Simpsons without something coming up to do with it. It's kind of everywhere, and obviously Judy Garland was just wonderful. I just reckon it would have been a real
that's
moment.
That's a great shout. That's a proper good shout. I love the idea of watching it in black and white and the yellow brick road bit. It's like, what were people thinking?
Yeah, exactly.
Just follow the slightly grey road.
Yeah, exactly. The scope for creativity was just heightened so much, and suddenly the colour of things mattered. Because imagine, like, being a filmmaker when things were still black and white, you must have felt so hindered, because you're like, oh, this is red, but they're not going to know it's red, and it's meant to be red, and if I was doing this in the theatre, it would be red to signify X, Y, Z. We see the thing in Psycho, didn't they, that they used... They actually used chocolate sauce instead of anything that actually resembled blood, because of the way the colour sort of distorts it.
Because the way it works, yeah.
Yeah, just an interesting time to be in the film industry, I imagine.
What was it like seeing it for the first time?
Yeah.
do you know what, right? Like, still to this day, like, I think that film is one of the greatest things ever made. And it still terrifies me. It still... makes me bawl my eyes out every time Judy Garland sings. It's just something special. That's without, you know, and now knowing what happened to that poor woman, like, just magnifies the pain of that record. But to this day, even though I've seen that film hundreds of times, that moment where it goes from black and white to colour, my eyes still widen. Like, I still go... It's still just got that little kind of... Because you know it's coming now as well, but it still doesn't detract from the magic of that, that all of a sudden it just bursts into life even more, because you're then lost in fantasy as well from that point onwards as well. Oh, absolutely marvellous. Mm. Absolutely marvellous.
It's timeless,
yeah,
isn't it, really?
Absolutely. But I'm already casting Maxine Peake in a more of a bleak... kind of kitchen sense. Yeah. Let's not go there.
Version of the Wizard of Oz.
Oh dear, oh dear. Okay, Josh, what you got for me?
Number three, and Alice has just touched on it actually, is Psycho. Psycho.
Amazing.
So yeah, I think it's one of the best horror films ever made. And obviously, if you don't already know, there was a massive marketing thing around it when it came out, with Hitchcock insisting that, allegedly, I don't know, obviously, because it's a long time ago, but allegedly insisted that people went into one entrance and left through the fire exit, so that people couldn't be heard talking about it as they as they left, because obviously there are multiple twists in Psycho. The first one being, and it was one of the first uses of, if you, spoilers if you haven't seen a 60-year-old film, but is that they do the dummy casting, right? So you cast a very famous person and you kill them off. So people go in thinking they're watching Janet Leigh and she dies within half an hour. And then it's like, what the hell is it going to be about now? So that's the one of the things. Then obviously you've got the fact that Norman Bates is mother, and then you've got the killing of the detective as well. So yeah, so I just love the whole idea around Psycho, the fact that, and I believe as well that Hitchcock recorded a video where he came on before it and asked people not to discuss it with friends and stuff. So that sort of thing, I like that sort of like that extra mile around the marketing of a film. I think it goes a long way. I remember, I'm not comparing the two, but when I went to see Endgame, there were signs all around the cinema that said, don't spoil the Endgame, don't talk about it as you leave, and stuff like that. So I really like that. I think that to go that extra mile heightens the experience a little bit. So yeah, Psycho, I mean, and like you say, like Alice said, you know, you got real iconic things that it was the first for, so that you got the shower scene. First time a toilet was flushed as well, so always nice to see that.
I did not know that.
I think it's the first ever scene of a that they could show a toilet flushing or something like that.
The rules used to be wild.
It's quite sexy.
It's hard.
We can all agree. I've not embarrassed myself there.
It's hard, isn't it, to see a toilet flushing and be like, whoa, a bit of that.
Yeah, exactly. My mind's just on the toilet. I can't think about the rest of the film.
But Psycho, I mean, you know, it's an iconic film, so to be there on opening night, but all that mystery around it. It was almost The Exorcist. It was one of the two, because there was a whole, you know, there's the whole legend of The Exorcist of people fainting and stuff like that. But I just prefer Psycho, so I picked it.
Great shout. I remember before even seeing it, my dad was like, my dad kind of ruined it before I saw it.
Yeah.
Which is all right, but he built up that majesty. He was like, oh, you don't understand that this, how they built up the marketing for this is, we all went in there, we were all so shocked at what had happened within that first like 10 minutes, like you say, Josh. I love that. I like that about horror as well. I think horror can often get it wrong, but good horror, because it really can go as far as it wants to test your senses, can't it? And yeah, Psycho knocked it out of the park.
And actually, back to my other choice, it's quite similar to The Matrix, because The Matrix had the whole marketing campaign of, what is The Matrix?
Oh, yeah.
That was the whole thing, wasn't it? Of like, it was a film marketed on confusion. Mm. And Psycho's
phones.
Not. And phones.
And phones.
And big leather jackets and Stephen Graham playing a Northern
that's
Neo.
That's the thing that bothered me, them jackets.
Big leather jackets.
Someone runs an alternative nightclub and it just... It was just a new look. Like, it was like anyone that worked in Games Workshop, that was their staff uniform. It'd be like, right, pop your Matrix jacket on the door and come in and you can start working. And it just become this new look of, it was like, it, you didn't even have to be a goth. It was just like, even if you was a bit of an awkward metaller, it was like, don't worry, mate, there's a big hug in a Matrix jacket over there. Go and buy one from Camden Market. You're in safe hands now. That's what The Matrix done.
Embarrassing confession.
Oh, please, please.
Yes.
No, it's not as bad as you think, Steve. But I bought, it was from Boxresh, but it was a long black.
Don't try and make it cold.
It weren't leather.
What did you buy?
It weren't leather. It was a long black coat that went all right past my knees. And it was black, and it looked a bit Neo-ish. And like, when I wore it, I did feel a little bit like Neo. So I absolutely can appreciate how exciting it must have been to buy a big long leather jacket. Like, I get it. I could have easily got pulled into that fantasy world myself. But as someone, as a patron of the Pink Toothbrush, you would see so many lads in there with black leather, long leather jackets. And
question.
Just living their best
question
life.
Question for you, mate, right? So I want one word answer, right? You walk out your front door in your new full-length black jacket, right? The word in your head is Neo. What's the first word that gets shouted at you?
Cunt.
Thank you.
In my neighbourhood, it would have been. Yeah.
Didn't stop me though, did it?
Oh, wonderful. Chris, have you got one? Do you want to throw one in there?
All right, so tenuous link to Josh's one, right? And I hope this doesn't come up. No, this isn't going to come up, right? And this is quite funny because it actually comes back to something Alice was talking about, cancel culture, et cetera, et cetera. But so obviously there was then Scream, which did a very similar thing to what obviously Psycho did. Mm-hmm. And it was tremendous. I love Scream. I've seen most slasher films, but they don't really track with me as high as other horror genres. I do like them, but just not as much. But Scream, I did love it. I've got to say, I really enjoyed it. I was probably, again, about 18, 19 when it came out. But an audience reaction, which was really funny, was in Scary Movie.
Yeah.
And, oh no, we're actually doing things I'd have loved to have seen and didn't. Stu, I'm actually not going to do it because I don't want to say any that the guys, but once they're done, I'll throw a few in just in case, because I've done it before, guys, where I literally
say my number
ruin
one
a top
all the time.
Five.
Every time.
I have done it. I've ruined guest number ones as well. Rich Wilson's. I've done his.
He was on number five as well. And you just went straight in and took his number one.
And thing is, he sent us his list beforehand, and I'd read it. God. It's not that I hadn't read it; I'd just forgotten.
That's terrible.
I know. What was the topic on that one?
It was films.
And was it horror film? It was horror film. It was along those lines. Was it
Scorsese films?
I can't honestly, mate. This is 4 or 5 years ago now. I can't actually remember. But yeah, I did ruin his Steely Thunder.
Straight in with Goodfellas.
Yeah, but yeah, it was honestly something like that. And then Stu and Mitch looked at me like, what are you doing?
Okay.
Where are we? Is it Josh's number three?
No, that's Psycho.
Alice's number two. Ooh.
There we go. So number two for me is Jaws.
Great show.
Stu. What are your thoughts on Jaws before I start heaping its praises?
Well, you'll be surprised.
It's probably my favourite of a film.
All right, sick. I've done a good one. All right, time to get excited. So I see that film when I was a child, I think far too young, watching it at home. But I would just remember being equally terrified and equally fascinated. Like, I've got a bit of an interest in large sea creatures, shall we say. So like sharks and whales and dolphins. Not so much giant squid, but you know, I'm not saying never. And I think that sort of spurred that on a little bit. And I just thought that as terrifying as the shark was, it was really fucking cool. And then you watch it again as an adult. And yeah, the model looks shit and stuff. But the feeling is all still there.
Yeah.
So I just think it would have been cool to be able to, yeah, to be there opening night. And because when you see films for the first time when you're very young, you do miss a lot and you don't absorb it as maybe as analytically as you would like to when you're an adult. But to be able to do that, I think, like, at this age, with this brain, I think that would be cool.
That's a great show.
I'd love to see that in the cinema. Like, that score, to hear that through a sound system as well in a cinema would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Have you seen, I think there's a place in the States where you can watch it on a drive-in, but you're in a pool on a rubber ring.
No chance.
So it's on the screen and you're like... the temptation to duck under the water and just be like pulling on people's feet. Yeah.
Imagine that though, halfway, if they just cut in them scenes, but it was the scene of where you in them rubber rings, it cut to your feet like that, and you could see like everywhere you was rather than the people. That film blows my mind, absolutely blows my mind. The casting's incredible, and The scene, when you talk about the rubber rings, the scene that I remember, because I saw that when I was very young, and it's the scene where everybody's running out to sea, and there's a woman in the hat, and her kid don't come out to sea, and that scene absolutely broke me. And then the scene, I've said this before on this podcast quite a few times, but I remember my dad was laying on the floor, like on the carpet watching it, and I was on the sofa next to my mum. And he'd seen it already, and there's a scene where the camera's underwater and they go to the shipwreck.
Mm-hmm.
And like my dad knew what was coming, and at the point where the head goes into the porthole, my dad grabbed my calf. And I was only probably about 10, and I absolutely like screamed and like jumped out of the seat. And Oh, there's so much wonderful stuff about that film. I ain't got a problem with the second one either. Like, I'm on board with that as well. Like,
that's the moment for me that I'd want to be an opening night for the head in the boat.
Can you imagine?
Hear people react. I really want to see The Shark Is Broken as well. I haven't got time.
Is that the play?
Yeah, so
play?
It's about the three. It's about the because the three of them didn't get on very well. And obviously, basically, it was a bit of a nightmare production, wasn't it? Mm. Which, considering the legacy of the film and the fact that it was the first blockbuster, it's mad, isn't it, that it was such a troubled production and Bruce the Shark and all that and everything going wrong. So I'd love to see The Shark Is Broken, but I think it's only on in London at the moment.
Have you seen... I don't even know if it's still on in London. I think it might not be running at the moment. I might be wrong. But have you seen the footage of Robert Shaw's granddaughter on this TV chat show, and she's in the crowd, and Richard Dreyfuss is being interviewed, and they bring Robert Shaw's granddaughter down, and she'd never met him, and literally Dreyfuss is in absolute floods of tears. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing if you get a chance to watch it.
No, I've never seen that.
Go and watch it. It's so lovely.
Is that after he passed away?
Yeah. Yeah, it's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, that's a great choice, Alice. I didn't even think of yours.
Yeah, I do. And I think you've come on to... You've actually created a great secret cinema there, Josh, as well. Can you imagine, like a secret cinema where you're all in the pool and the lights are pretty much off? You've obviously got lifeguards, but the lights are off and you've got... They put a mechanical shark in there at some point. It's going to come out, and other people going underwater, like in Scooby gear, grabbing your legs. I struggle with that. I love that choice, but I think it was so terrifying. As you say, I'd have to watch it as an adult because as a child, that terrorized me. That film, it was brilliant, and it is one of my favourite films. But it terrorized my imagination. My brother, who's 18 years older than me, he saw it, and he was worried there was a shark on the landing when he saw it back in the 80s. Yeah, he was like, he couldn't sleep. He thought the shark was going to get him on the landing.
Mm-hmm. It's the old irrational fear of there being a shark in the swimming pool, isn't it? How would one get in there? But what if there is one?
Yeah. But what if there is one?
Yeah. I mean, it's surviving water, but on a landing, I think your brother was just a fucking idiot.
Unless it's like one of those cartoon ones that can walk.
Yeah, good point. I didn't think of that. Yeah. Sorry, Ross, I'll take that back.
A shark wouldn't have survived in Gloucester Park swimming pool, the amount of chlorine that was in that as well. But
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Just a very, in its eyes.
A very clean dead shark.
Yeah.
Got loads of like old plaster stuck to it and like an arrangement sort of veruca sock. Oh, dear. Can I throw one in?
Go on.
What if it's my number one? I'll be sad.
Have you got a Monty Python film in there?
No. I haven't.
Oh, there we go.
I'd like to have gone to the opening showing in America of The Life of Brian because of the furore that there was religious fanatics and priests, etc., outside the cinemas, like telling people not to go in here and watch the sort of blasphemy that you're about to be subjected to. Like, for you were saying about, leaving through the fire exit, that kind of cinematic kind of extra experience. Just the thought of hearing kind of what would have been going on with the press and knowing what, how anarchic Python was and what you was going to get, and then to turn up and there being like hordes of, religious fanatics just, screaming at you not to go and watch this film. Must have been so exciting and kind of uncomfortable, and the fact that, like, by the time you've sat in that seat and the opening credits come on, you must just be thinking, what am I about to see? Like, am I about to see something written? And then what you're going to get is pure genius comedy and one of the funniest things you're ever likely to see or still see.
Yeah. It's proper Father Ted, isn't it? It's down with this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Careful now. But I think the interview with the Pythons and the Bishops is still on YouTube. Have you ever seen that?
No. Oh, no, no, of course I have. Yeah, sorry, I thought he was talking about a sketch on that chat show, isn't
no,
it?
No, no,
yeah.
So it's they got, it's not all of them, I think it's John Cleese and Michael Palin, or John Cleese and one of them, and they obviously, in all the controversy, they brought some bishops on, and they hadn't seen it. And it's like, but Jesus is in it as a character, so how can it be blasphemous? The whole point is, it's just a joke that he was born next door to him. So my grandfather's sister is she's still around, and she's in it. She's almost 90 now, and she's actually a nun, so she's been a nun for 60 years. She loves it. She thinks it's hilarious. Honestly, she proper loves the Life of Brian.
Love it.
So, yeah.
Love it.
So I love that. Love Life of Brian.
Good shout, Stewie.
Yeah.
Right. Who's up next?
It's me, isn't it? It's my number two.
Yeah, it's your number two.
Because you said yours, didn't you? So my number two is Star Wars: The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. For sure. Just want to be there for that moment. The one we all know. See if it was, you know, see the gasps and all that. So I thought about saying the first one, but I just, obviously, Empire Strikes Back is my favourite one. It's absolutely brilliant. And I just love to be there for the... Spoilers if you've not seen Star Wars, but the I'm Your Father bit. I mean, all of it in general, it's a brilliant film, because it is, again, a bit going back to The Matrix, it did so much for particularly franchise cinema, because you have now, I mean, how many times now do you see a second film in a trilogy or a second film in a franchise where they go, oh, we're gonna Empire Strikes Back it, and what they mean is, we're gonna basically make it as bleak as fuck at the ending so that the last film is the sort of resurrection of the characters and the wrapping up of the trilogy and all that. So yeah, I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? You know, it's an amazing film. Even after the first Star Wars, which in itself was an incredible feat, but all the models and all that, all the filmmaking, the way they did everything, I love it. I mean, did you say you liked Star Wars, Stu, earlier?
I was lucky, but I got took to Leicester Square, and the first
did you
and
see
I saw
it,
Star
Square?
Wars at Leicester Square when it first dropped.
The first one.
Yeah. And it was, you know, I remember it probably being the first time, it wasn't the first time I went to the cinema, I'm sure. But yeah, I have very vivid memories of that. And then I sounded like such a spoilt shit. I really wasn't. But I got, afterwards, they took me, because I'd never been to, not Harris Hamley's, this big toy shop that we was told that, I could go to afterwards. And they bought me, and I got R2-D2 and Luke Skywalker figures. And nice. Which is still literally over there with my collection of Star Wars toys. And I saw them all at, you know, I'm old as fuck, so I saw them all at the cinema. and I think the only film that I ever went to and stayed and got up in the stupid o'clock to go and watch was Phantom Menace. Should have just stayed in bed.
How did you find that?
Do you know the only thing worse than I had disappointing in that film was being a Star Wars nut like I was, especially that era. I was so... I had lightsabers. I was really just absolutely obsessed with Star Wars. I'd read all the books, And anyway, I'd managed to somehow dodge everything about The Phantom Menace. Everything. I barely even watched the trailer. I mean, back then it was kind of harder to see trailers and that. But I think I'd caught a few at the cinema. But I'd managed to avoid most of it, and I was in a pub just before we went in, and then one of my mates told me just everything that happens in the end so quickly that I didn't even get a chance to stop him.
Still in touch with him?
He's one of my original old school mates, but like I nearly hit him, Josh.
How fast was he talking that you couldn't interrupt me?
Because the thing is...
You weak-minded fool.
The thing is, he's also a bit of an arsehole. So, like, at the point at which I'd said... Because he'd said the first thing, and I said, well, fucking stop it. And he left it a bit, and then he told me the next bit. And I was just like, honestly, I was so heartbroken. And then I watched the film, and... The one bit he didn't say, which would have been better, if he'd have just prepared me for Jar Jar Binks, I think it would have been... But if he'd have just said, it's all right, but there's this character in it which is going to make the film 20% worse, I'd have probably enjoyed it.
I'm quite a defender of the prequel trilogy, but that's because I'm the right age. So I saw them... It's like all the people who absolutely laid into the sequel trilogy, right? And I get it, like, they are really flawed, but... There are people who will have watched the sequel trilogy who 20 years' time will remember them really fondly, like we do. It's like so. I like the prequel trilogy. I understand all the flaws of them. Don't get me wrong, but I remember being so excited to watch the Phantom Menace as a kid.
You get to hear the score for the first time. You get to hear a long time ago, and then you get that hit in the face of that.
Yeah, yeah. And
what
and
a moment.
Yeah. So,
space battles and the fights are insane, man. They are mind-blowingly good. Yeah. I actually, Josh, love Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, I do.
The second one. I went twice in one day.
Yeah, I remember watching. Obviously, one of the big things about the Attack of the Clones that everyone says is that the Yoda fight scene is shit because it's just a little CGI green blob. But I remember being in the cinema going, I can't believe I'm getting to see Yoda with a lightsaber. You got to remember as well that Star Wars actually are sort of glorified kids films.
What?
They're not always made for the people who specifically love them. They're very broad, and I think that I like the prequel trilogy for that. Again, I remember watching Revenge of the Sith and feeling like it was everything in my life had built up to that moment when I was like 14. So, but you know, I do also understand the flaws of them. But yeah, Empire Strikes Back, just to be in there for the moments that we all know and love from Empire Strikes Back.
Alice, you a Star Wars fan?
How bothered in Star Wars are you, Alice?
Sort of like a passive fan. Like when The Force Awakens was coming out, because my husband's like well into it. He's like massive nerd. Like every nerdy thing you can think of, he loves it. And in the build up to The Force Awakens coming out, he was obviously really excited. You know, there was a lot of hype. So I was like, right, we'll go and watch it in the cinema, but I need to know something about Star Wars first before I go in. I hadn't seen any of the films. And there's these videos on YouTube that are like, a history of Star Wars in 10 minutes sort of thing. So I started watching that, got about 2 minutes in and was like, oh, I'm going to have to watch them. Because I was like, these actually look pretty good. So I watched the original trilogy. I enjoyed those. I started to try and watch the prequel trilogy. The Phantom Menace wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be because Darth Maul, I think, redeems a lot of it. Like, because he's such a great character. And then I really... This is so shallow, but basically Hayden Christensen is obviously just a fine, fine vision of a man. But in Attack of the Clones, obviously, he's got that fucking horrible rat tail. And I was like, I can't take him seriously. Like, I can't watch him act. Ewan McGregor as well. I was like, there was a block there where I suppose maybe I didn't appreciate the Star Wars lore enough to know that those things, those braids and having your hair that way is important. And instead it just pissed me off too much, so I couldn't watch Attack of the Clones. But then I come back and watch...
It
just pissed me off. Come back and watch Revenge of the Sith, which I thought was really good, and I think...
He's got lovely long hair in that, Annie.
I think Hayden Christensen, he's a real highlight for me. It was strange with Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor because obviously they are great actors, but they didn't give like career best performances, which I think where some of the flaws are. But sorry, this is a long-winded way of me saying, yeah, I'm kind of into Star Wars.
I love that the rat tail thing always used to annoy me because it's like at some point there's been a production meeting where they've gone, so what like haircuts do the Padawans have? And they've gone, got like a buzz cut, right? Okay, like so like they're army cadets. Yeah, like they're army cadets. They got a little ponytail. What? Yeah, a little tiny ponytail. Why? Just because. Irritate people.
Can you imagine that moment when McGregor got that job? You know, he was such a fan, wasn't he? And he was like, oh my God. And when he even talks about the Obi-Wan series now, he's like, I can't believe I'm doing this. Can you imagine when he gets to like makeup and they're like, let's just attach this to the back of your... What? Oh fuck!
Like Rodney's,
Rodney's ponytail. That must be like, oh for fuck's sake! I thought it was going too well.
Just got to clip this to your back of your head. What?
Is it you and McGregor's brother is in the RAF and his call sign's Obi-2?
Shut up!
Apparently so. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Incredible.
Is it
number one?
Isn't
number
it?
One.
Okie dokie. This will come as no surprise to Josh whatsoever or anyone who's ever spoken to me for more than 5 minutes. The number one film for me is Terminator 2. It's my favourite film of all time. I love it so much. I loved it when I was a child. I love it now. And I would have been there. But I think I was 1 year old at the time, so that may not have been appropriate for me to be in the cinema. I just love it. It's my favourite. and that's it.
What was the year of release, Ellie?
Well, I thought it was 1990.
91,
was
I
it,
think.
Was 90. It a bit after that, was it? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So yeah, 1990.
I would have loved to have seen that. Like, for him to double down, I mean, like, watching, knowing about Cameron and like how far he'd come, like what he had to do to make Terminator and what he was doing before it as a, like, almost like a set designer, and then what he did with Terminator 2, it was just the next level. It's kind of what you always wish Hollywood do with its sequels, which is make them better. But like, although Terminator 2 has like almost like a lot more action, a lot more X, Y, and Z, Hollywood a lot of the time just does that, but forgets about a narrative
and the story.
Yes, Terminator
2
was just so well developed from the first one. He just took it so well, and then you've got all the groundbreaking special effects. Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
It still looks good.
It has not aged badly, and that takes a real skill. But I do think James Cameron is quite good at that. If you go back and look at some of his earlier films, like he's good at the way he constructs the image on the screen, and so you can look at it now and it feels like it could have come from today. Like with the T-1000, obviously, like, you know, melting and coming back and melting and stuff. But the thing for me, one of the obviously best moments in this film is when Arnie, he gets into the hospital and Sarah Connor's there and she sees him for the first time, and it's like the gravity of that given what happened in the first film. It's just brilliant. I think she's great as well, Linda Hamilton, in that, and little John Connor as well, Edward Furlong. I think he does a really good job. Not easy to be a child actor. He did a good job, and I just love the way the story develops. I love the way the characters develop. I love that they don't try and force in some weird, like, romantic, like, love story or anything, and it really is more about the Terminator and John and their relationship, and then how that develops, and then how Sarah Connor's got to like learn to trust this thing and has to adapt as quickly as she can, even though just a few years ago he was trying to blow her brains out. Like, it's just a lot going on for the characters. I feel like you can really feel the depth in them. But yeah, and the action's fucking sick as well, like when he's on that motorbike chasing that truck's chasing him. Oh my god,
reloading,
so good.
That shotgun, that's fine,
pulls that shotgun out the box of roses. I was like, oh, that's so fucking cool. Even when I was a kid, I was like, this is the fucking coolest thing I've ever seen. Yeah, it's just the best film ever.
It is the bollocks. I can't deny it. I'd have been too young for that as well, Alice. I absolutely would have loved to have seen that. That's kind of my era of, I guess that era is what made me forever a film fanatic. So I'll probably give a shout out to something similar to that shortly. Josh, what you got, mate?
My number one is Batman from 1989.
Ooh.
So I was you know, wrestling with what do I put to, I mean, any of these, it could have been Empire Strikes Back, but I thought I'm a massive Batman fan, huge Batman fan, love the comics and all that sort of stuff. And I've seen loads of stuff about what a massive hype there was around Batman 89 when it was coming out. Apparently you couldn't move for Batman merchandise and Batman stuff everywhere. And I just would love to have been there in opening night, seeing it for the first time, this dark, really gothic Batman. Jack Nicholson as a sort of mental, crazy uncle version of the Joker. I mean, I still love it. It's not perfect, but I still love it. I remember, I love it. I'd love to have been there when it first came out. So yeah, for me, it's Batman 89 just to satisfy my love of the character, I suppose.
Wonderful.
Did you see it, Stu?
Yeah. Oh, that was Prince, right?
I'm a huge Prince fan as well. So
it was for me. I grew up watching the original Adam West and Burt Ward. Series as a kid, and yeah, when that came out, the hype around it was ridiculous, and obviously, you know, Nicholson being in it as well, and just the score, it was like, fucking hell, Prince has made, like, you know, a film score for Batman, and it was so exciting. And yeah, I went to the cinema, I watched that. I'm just feeling so fucking old on this podcast today. Obviously, I saw... I wonder if he's talking about, like, oh, I was about 3 when Terminator came out. I was just thinking, I was 18 when Terminator 2 came out. but yeah, like, seeing Batman at the cinema, and seeing Terminator 2 at the cinema as well. Like, for me, like, Batman, that was an experience. It really was. It was, like... They've brought back Batman. This is fucking amazing. Obviously, I had no idea it was going to become what it's becoming in the world of movies. But yeah, amazing, man. Absolutely amazing. Did you not see it, Chris?
So I got a big long story about the fact that I got to go to see Batman Returns, but I was quite young because it was rated, I think it was 12, and I was about 11. And I was such a goody two shoes that, basically we got to the front and they were like, "You sure you're 12? And I was like, "Oh, I'm really sorry." And then my mate's brother just fucking grabbed me and went, "Yeah, he is." And just like, sort of like, big brothered, got me through. Because I was like, "I've been busted. Sorry, guys.
Going down. Going down.
It's a jail time. I'm sorry.
Don't call me. Really
put me in handcuffs. I'll get the chair."
Everyone's had to rehearse their date of birth or whatever for a film, right? Everyone. Mine, I think my first one was The World Is Not Enough. And my parents were like, "And what year were you born?" And I was going, 1987. Whatever. But yeah.
But, my first certificate 15 was a horror film called House. And
oh, yeah.
Do you remember House?
Yeah,
and,
I do.
It was that. And I remember trying to work out what my date of birth was and going, right, yeah, star sign. If they ask what my star sign is,
who was prime minister when you were born?
And that was it. Once I got in my first 15, I just thought, right, that's it. And about 3 days later, I went and watched Platoon. And then that scene where Kevin Dillon smashes that guy's head open with the butt of his gun, I walked out of cinema that day and thought, I don't want to watch any more 15s for a long time.
Oh my God, that was too much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's a great shout, Batman. But Batman Returns, I was super buzzing to go and watch it, and that kind of was the era of it was just slightly after for the next Batman film, which we won't get into. But Batman Returns, I thought was really good. It was pretty dark. Danny DeVito, good turn as the Penguin. Still had that really weird dark
piece. So and gothic, like, Stu, isn't it?
I loved the old Batman with Adam Ware. I mean, I really loved that. I mean, the film, if you've ever seen that, that's absolutely camp so joy. Good.
Bonkers, isn't it?
Wonderful.
Bonkers.
It's brilliant. But I loved that Batman, like you say, guys. It was incredible. Michael Keaton was great. The outfits, the liners.
I'm just gutted that it looks like both his appearances in the future are going to be pulled from the cinema.
Mm. Oh, really?
So he's meant to be coming back, isn't he? And it looks like, they pulled Batgirl. And he was in that, and it now looks like they're going to have to pull the Flash for reasons I won't get into because it's ongoing legal stuff, but it looks like they're going to have to pull it, and you're like, can you not just cut his scenes out and just show them? I'll pay. Cut all the other characters out. I just want to see him back in the costume.
Just like his showreel.
Has there been some weird stuff made accusations of about...
Not against him.
Oh, right.
Against,
Keaton's clear.
It looks like they're going to have to pull the film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I heard someone say something about Batgirl the other day, and I was like, "All right, I didn't."
It's a proper weird choice to pull it. Just pissing away 90 million quid.
Yeah.
Let's put it on HBO, and if you say you have to pay a fiver to watch it, people would.
isn't it something about the tax break? Like if they don't release it, then they get a huge, huge tax break or something. Whereas if they release it, then
I want to see Michael Keaton. Alice.
It's got
to
be pretty bad for them to think that it's better off being a tax break than a moneymaker.
I think they're doing it on purpose. I think they're doing it to generate this hype. They probably felt that there wasn't enough hype around it before. And then now this has happened. A lot of people apparently are outraged. So I think it's intentional. But
I suppose I have trust issues
with Hollywood and the man.
What's happened in Hollywood that would make you not trust men, exactly. Alex? For God's sake.
Not men, exactly. The man. The capitalist man in his top hat and monocle. Jacob Rees-Mogg, basically.
Oh, wonderful. I mean, we've also... shout out while we've got film podcasters on to our fellow podcast from the Distraction Pieces Network. And speaking of big blockbuster films, Brett Goldstein's got a new gig.
Oh. I couldn't believe it. I sat through it and I went, oh my God.
Did you stick about and watch the credits at the end of
So I'm a huge fan of Ted Lasso and I listen to Brett's podcast. I found Brett's podcast when I came up with the concept for this.
Right.
Because I thought I should probably see if there's anything doing the same thing. And obviously he has a question in his questions that's sort of similar, but I thought it's distant enough that he's not. Yeah. Plus he's like Premier League and I'm like, Vanarama North.
Do you not know about this? It's been in the WhatsApp group. Huge amounts. So at the end of the Thor film, after the credits, when they put the thing up, they cut to Russell Crowe as Zeus, talking about his son, about the next film, and he says, my son, Hercules, and it cuts to Brett Goldstein as Hercules.
No way!
It's the next big MCU villain. Well, Brett. One of the next, yeah.
Did you not know this?
Oh, my, no, because I still haven't had a chance to see the new Thor film. I really want to, and I just haven't
it
been
able to. It was on our WhatsApp group
it.
For
I can't
about...
Is that a massive spoiler?
God.
You just ruined it for him.
Yeah, but it's
shows
fine.
How much attention
insane.
You pay to our fucking group.
Oh, I hate WhatsApp. I cannot be bothered with it. Now I feel like that was a terrible life choice. That is insane.
I was so happy when I saw it.
Oh my God, I'm going to have to text him. That's insane. Oh wow.
It's
That's
on
brilliant.
YouTube. Go watch
that's,
it.
That's so cool.
It's pretty wonderful. Yeah. Right, well look, have we done everyone's top fives?
Can I just throw special mention?
Go for it.
Jurassic Park 3. I think we can all agree that we will. No, I'm joking.
The third one.
I'd probably.
I was like, save space. Yes, that's fine. That's a good choice.
If that's what you want, then.
If I had to, it would be Aliens. Obviously for me, because Aliens is probably my favorite film of all time. Debatable. Or we mentioned James Carpenter earlier with Vampires, which is it's got its moments, but it's actually awful normally. The Thing. I'd love to have watched The Thing.
Yeah.
What did you say? I'd love to see The Thing. The Thing at the cinema, I think, would have twisted people's melons. It's hard work, that film, if for the creature feature. It's an incredibly, incredibly written and acted film. But the special effects in it for its time, and I remember watching it and I was about 15, and the bit where they go to resuscitate the dude. Mm. And things don't go quite as you'd expect when you resuscitate someone. I just scared the absolute shit out of me, and I'd love to see that reaction in a cinema. But that, or seeing Sigourney Weaver saying "Get away from her, you bitch," is just for me is like the peak of cinema. So she's my favourite hero of all time. I think Ellen Ripley's the shit. I think it's close. Linda Hamilton did an absolute sterling effort as well, but. Yeah, I'd love it. Aliens or The Thing. I'll take either.
I don't think I could top Jaws or Wizard of Oz. Solid choices.
They're great. They're up there.
I'm good at lists, me.
This is a safe space for lists right here. All right, well, look, before we wrap it up, so what can people expect week in, week out from the pod? And if you had to direct them to an episode that will be a good taster where you think, do you know what? I don't expect you to say my one. You're right. There's no pressure on you to go. You go and listen to mine. But if you had to pick one, you go like, do you know what? This one really captures what we was trying to do with the pod. Where would you send them?
I'm trying to think. What would you say, Alice?
I think...
Pop star. Oh, don't say
not
Grease
pop star too. Because it wasn't balanced. Like something that you could balance that really like get into the nitty gritty of everything that we're talking about. I think the number 23 is quite a good example.
That's
because
that's
quite a divisive film.
Because I didn't like it and you did as well. So
yeah,
that was,
and then anything that would kind of spur the conversation, I suppose. But ultimately, I think it helps if you like the film too as well. So I guess it just depends what you're into. But yeah, the ones where we can be properly balanced, because there have been a few where we get to the end of the likes and I just kind of go, oh, that one bit of music wasn't very good, was it? And it's like, anything else? Nah, it was perfect. So I do, yeah. But the number 23 is good. We've got one coming out shortly, or it may already be out when this goes out. But I think the Solomon and Gaynor one was really good.
That's a very underseen one. That's the most
underseen film.
I couldn't even find it.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. But yeah, a lot to say about it.
Obviously,
Shoes on, talking about The Wanderers, best soundtrack we've ever done.
Oh my god, yeah, brilliant.
It's like a shit that film.
I liked it. I quite liked it.
I'm joking.
Have you ever watched it? I've been telling you to watch it for 5 years, haven't I?
If I say yeah like that, what would you think? Would you think I'm lying?
Do you know what? Go and pop your fucking Matrix jacket on. Get out in that heat, mate. honestly, Alice, Josh, thanks so much for coming on.
Lots of fun.
Thank you.
Podcast is available in all the usual places, right?
Yeah, every Tuesday. Comes every Tuesday. Underseen, underrated films. Guest usually about once a month and a classic every now and then. Yeah, so if you've got any ideas, email in. Chris, you'll have to come on yourself if you're up for
it. I'd love it. I love talking about films. Yeah, so I'd love to do it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Wherever you get your podcasts, all the social media is just at Films and That Pod, or just search for Just Films and That, and you'll find us.
Wonderful.
We're also on the television. I'll just shamelessly plug this one as well.
Yeah.
So we're on the local TV network every Friday from 6 p.m. So if you live in Birmingham, Bristol, Leeds, Liverpool, or the northeast of England, we're on Channel 7 on Freeview. If you live in North Wales or South Wales, we're on Channel 8 on Freeview. Or if you live anywhere in the UK and you have Sky, you can watch us on, depending on when this comes out, 195 or soon to be 188, because we've got bumped up the channels.
Oh,
so
love
that's
it.
Quite nice, isn't it?
Rising up the places.
Love it. Thank you so much for coming on. We're going to press stop.
Thanks for having us.
Don't go anywhere.
Thanks, guys.
It's a drunken soiree in the Within. Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.